The United States will stand with the people of India as they confront threats to their sovereignty and to their liberty.
The United States strengthens ties in South Asia. It's Monday, November 2nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, elections near, tensions rise, sifting through Aussie ashes, South Korea's COVID churches, banning plastics, driving through Halloween. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Analysts say U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's announcement of a landmark security agreement with India marks another step toward building closer ties to South Asia and countering China's influence in the region. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more on Pompeo's recent trip to India, Sri Lanka, Maldives, and Indonesia.
During his South Asia tour, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the opening of a U.S. embassy in the Indian Ocean archipelago nation of Maldives. As on every stop, Pompeo pushed back against what the U.S. views as China's economic exploitation and military aggression in the Indo-Pacific region.
Issues about security in the Maldives and other island nations I've been to, like Micronesia and Sri Lanka, have taken on new importance as the Chinese Communist Party continues its lawless and threatening behavior.
In India, Pompeo and Defense Secretary Esper signed landmark security and military agreements. Amid an ongoing border dispute between India and China, Pompeo described the threat from Beijing in stark terms.
The United States will stand with the people of India as they confront threats to their sovereignty and to their liberty.
Analysts say Pompeo visited countries that have received major infrastructure assistance from China, but are now realizing that money came with strings attached.
These countries are also increasingly concerned about China's investments, concerned about financing aspects, debt trap diplomacy, and all that. So I think that for Pompeo, he sees an opportunity to try to capitalize on growing concern about China from within these countries.
Even before Pompeo landed in Sri Lanka, China warned the U.S. not to bully Colombo, which has received huge investment from Beijing. State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas responded in a VOA interview.
That's kind of fresh coming from a country that spends their time bullying other countries, whether it's in the South China Sea, or whether it relates to breaking their promises in Hong Kong or Taiwan. You know, this is a country that is used to beating their chest and getting their way in the international community.
Ortegas said that at each stop in South Asia, Pompeo has stressed shared democratic values and is grateful to conduct diplomacy face-to-face during the global COVID-19 pandemic. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's visit to South Asia covered a lot of ground and a lot of topics. You can find more on our top story by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also stop by our Facebook page at VOA Asia. This and many other stories can be found on our website at voanews.com. We invite you to stop by all of them. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Super typhoon kills at least 10 in Philippines. Hong Kong opposition politicians arrested over legislature protest. Former Thai Prime Minister sees merit in protesters' demands. Sister of missing Thai activists headed to Cambodia. Vietnam gets boost from Western allies in its defense against China. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more are found daily on our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Also stop by our website. That's voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. We continue. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United Nations Human Rights Office warns Myanmar's discriminatory citizenship and electoral laws cast doubt on the fairness of next week's general elections, putting the country's professed transition to democracy at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights says new rules and regulations put in place ahead of Myanmar's November 8th general elections create further restrictions on people's right to participate in this political process. Those most affected are the Rohingya Muslim and ethnic Rakhine population in Rakhine State. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA decisions announced in mid-October by the UN Election Commission have significantly disenfranchised these minority groups.
So even where they would have otherwise been able to vote, elections aren't taking place in many of these townships. So as I said, elections will not be taking place in 56 townships across the country. And of these, 9 of the townships in Rakhine, in their entirety, cannot vote.
In April, the government enacted a presidential directive denouncing public hate speech. Despite this, the UN agency says there has been an unrelenting proliferation in Myanmar of such speech against Muslims on Facebook. The Human Rights Office criticizes continuing restrictions of the freedoms of opinion, expression, and access to information. It notes an internet shutdown remains in place in 8 townships in Rakhine and Chin states, severely limiting the ability of residents to exchange information. Shamdasani says the government has been using the worsening COVID-19 situation in the country to issue stay-at-home orders in certain areas.
And in the context of these orders as well, for example, journalists have been classed as non-essential, which means that really hampers their ability to be able to go out there and cover the elections and cover the campaigning on the hate speech and the disenfranchisement and all that we've described here. Which is all very worrying.
The UN agency is calling on Myanmar to denounce hate speech and to promote tolerance and non-discrimination in speech by public officials and candidates. It urges the government to take measures to guarantee the right of political participation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You may have heard about another election that is coming up. That's the U.S. presidential election, which now is tomorrow. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is leading President Donald Trump nationally in polls, but only by a razor-thin margin in some key states. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the latest on both campaigns and the millions of votes already cast.
More than 82 million Americans cast their ballots by Friday. In person, by mail or Dropbox, even from their vehicle.
Everybody keeps saying, go and just vote for us. Let's just make sure we get it done today.
Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has sought to frame the election as a referendum of President Donald Trump's pandemic response.
I'm not running on the false promise of being able to end this pandemic by flipping a switch. But what I can promise you is this. We will start on day one doing the right things.
Trump, meanwhile, is campaigning in part on the promise of prosperity, highlighting recent economic data.
Do you see the number today? 33.1 GDP, the biggest in the history of our country by almost triple, right? Almost triple.
Which brings the GDP to 3.5% below pre-pandemic levels. As protests over police violence continue to rock the United States, Biden blames the president for stoking racial divisions. Trump says he alone can return law and order, accusing his opponent of standing with anarchists and of having a socialist agenda that he says will ruin the U.S.
The Biden closing argument is exactly what his opening argument was, that it's time to unite the country and give it a fresh start. The Trump campaign's closing argument appears to be that Joe Biden and the Democrats will destroy your life. That's a tougher sell.
Former Vice President Biden on Friday maintained a 7% lead in national polls, but U.S. elections are not determined by the popular vote, and instead by electoral votes from each state based on its population. It's a winner-takes-all system in all 50 states except Maine and Nebraska. A candidate needs 270 out of 538 electoral votes to win.
This is going to
Trump is hoping to repeat his 2016 victory by securing Electoral College votes in critical battleground states where polls show Biden is ahead by only a slim margin.
Trump is not losing as badly in some of these swing states in the Midwest as he is nationally. But it's just a question about whether the national mood is going to be far enough apart between those vital swing states in the Midwest to really make the difference.
And which states are must-wins for Trump to stay in the White House?
Pennsylvania is going to be the key state to watch on election night. Other states to watch would include Florida. If the president kind of does not look very strong there or even loses in Florida, then it's very hard to see a clear path to victory for him.
Trump headlines two Pennsylvania rallies over the weekend, while Biden and his running mate Kamala Harris fan out across the state on Monday. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, about 100,000 counterfeit N95 face masks were seized by Hong Kong Customs, with officials stating the masks were meant for overseas markets. Authorities are trying to trace the source of the fake masks. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is the start of a very big week. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. A high-level report into Australia's devastating Black Summer bushfires warns that natural disasters are becoming more complex, more unpredictable, and even more difficult to manage. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Royal Commission, a high-level public inquiry into Australia's bushfires, said the Black Summer fires of 2019 occurred during Australia's hottest and driest year on record. According to the Commission's final report, more than 24 million hectares of land were burnt. 33 people died and more than 3,000 homes were destroyed. The Commission was set up in February to examine how Australia could become more resilient in the face of natural calamities. It's identified climate change as a key factor in an increasingly dangerous future. It warned that extreme weather had already become more frequent and intense because of climate change, bringing with it floods and bushfires. In the report released Friday, the inquiry said traditional firefighting methods might be no match for catastrophic fire conditions in the years and decades to come, when Australia would likely have more hot days and fewer cool days. The Commission has offered 80 recommendations, including the need for a national aerial firefighting fleet. Waterbombing aircraft are operated by individual states and territories, and the Commission called for greater across-the-board cooperation between federal and local authorities. An integrated countrywide early warning system to alert residents was also recommended. David Littleproud, the Minister for Emergency Management, says the report also advises harnessing firefighting techniques successfully used by Indigenous Australians.
It also brings into light the role that First Australians can play. And I've said this when this disaster first hit us back at the start of the year, is that our First Australians have a significant role to play in educating us and working with the new science to make sure that we can prepare better for particular bushfires in the future.
Aboriginal methods involve the lighting of small so-called cool fires in specific areas during the early dry season between March and July. The flames burn slowly, reducing vegetation that can feed wildfires, and that creates fire breaks. Australia's federal, state and territory leaders will soon discuss the Royal Commission's recommendations. Campaigners are urging them to adopt all of the recommendations and do more to address the impact of climate change. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
The This news from VOA Asia. North Korean state media shows that workers in a leather factory in the town of Wonsan are busy churning out shoes, as President Kim Jong-un has ordered an 80-day national campaign to boost the economy. You'll find these stories and much more throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, in South Korea, one of the main ways the coronavirus has spread is through cluster infections in religious communities. That has forced many religious groups to adopt new ways of worship, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
This Presbyterian church in Seoul is one of South Korea's largest. But during the COVID-19 pandemic, most members are worshiping virtually via this Zoom broadcast held live 4 times each Sunday. It's a high-tech and safe way to worship. Reverend Oh Jung-hyun says it's a challenging dynamic. But his church is still energetic.
We have more than 100,000 viewers. Every week we are getting 85 to 90% of our usual donation.
As is the case in the rest of the world, South Korean churches have found new ways to worship during the pandemic. But South Korea's experience is unique. Health authorities have linked about a quarter of the country's total coronavirus cases to cluster infections at just 2 religious groups, including this fringe group in the third largest city of Daegu. Authorities quickly imposed tight restrictions on church gatherings. It's been a struggle for smaller churches, like this independent Baptist congregation on the outskirts of Seoul. Here, there are fewer resources to conduct online services and pay staff, says Pastor Oh Song-hyun.
Our situation is completely different. More established churches may have enough committed people, but an independent church has few members and the facilities are relatively sparse.
Two South Korean pastors told VOA they expect around 30% of smaller churches to close if the pandemic lasts much longer. And while churches like this have mostly been cooperative, others have not, including this Seoul church, whose pastor is a prominent government critic. He says religious freedom is being restricted. But law professor Lim Ji-bong says the government is within its rights to restrict religious gatherings for public health reasons.
This is a temporary restriction on the external freedom of religious assembly, and it is in the public's interest. I disagree with any notion it means the government will be able to limit this freedom forever.
It's a question of how to deal with the virus while limiting freedoms as little as possible. So far, South Korea has succeeded in containing the virus. Many churches, though, wonder how much longer the restrictions will last. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take, wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, the plastic bag store is not really a store, but it's an art installation. Nina Vishneva, in this story narrated by Anna Rice, reports on this unique piece of art that's all about plastic.
In the very heart of Manhattan, in the formerly hectic Times Square, New York City gave the best spot in town to plastic.
There's tens of thousands of disposable plastic items in the grocery store that I spent a couple years collecting from various trash cans around New York City.
Every item in this pop-up grocery store installation is made of plastic bags.
This one took a while, but it was very fun to like figure out how to do all the like little like frosting effects all the way around.
I want to touch it.
You can touch it, yeah, for sure.
Turning something no one else wants into art is a time-honored tradition. So designer and artist Robin Frohart chose to work with one thing New York City has been trying to get rid of since March. The city was set to impose a plastic bag ban in March 2020, but the pandemic slowed things down. Before the plastic bag ban, New Yorkers were using over 20 billion plastic bags a year. 85% of those bags ended up in city dumping grounds and in the ocean.
New York is a very large city that produces a lot of waste, and anything that we can do to reduce that would be a good thing.
I bring my own bag only when I remember. Other than that, it's hard to.
But while the rest of the city is getting rid of its bags, the plastic store is one place in New York City where plastic bags are indispensable. Fanina Vishnova in New York, NRI's VOA News.
We hope you at least found some fun ways to celebrate this year's Halloween, even though the coronavirus pandemic has prevented large gatherings as well as the age-old tradition in the United States of trick-or-treating. One group in Los Angeles tried to bring some cheer by creating a drive-through Halloween event for children, who could still socially distance but enjoy a few scares and get some treats. We hear more from Ginia Duluth.
The threat of COVID-19 infection is limiting most gatherings, from large holiday celebrations to small birthday parties. So what happens when your child's birthday falls on October 31st, better known as Halloween? Well, if Dad is the CEO of Experiential Supply, the company that creates large-scale immersive experiences for big Hollywood movies, you get Hauntoween LA, a several city blocks long drive-through event.
Happy Hauntoween!
The scary sights and sounds are bringing socially distant joy to Los Angeles residents.
It's been so sad because we haven't been able to do anything for Halloween. So when we saw this was here, we were so excited to come.
We're not being able to go trick-or-treating or seeing our friends. So, like, this is a really good, like, escape and way to get into the Halloween spirit.
Employing all coronavirus precautions such as masks, social distancing, and sanitized pumpkins, the experience takes visitors through a jack-o'-lantern tunnel, a giant pumpkin patch, trick-or-treating lane in the town of Hauntoween, inhabited by various scary characters.
It gets crazy after dark. You gotta watch out for the witches, because they got all the tricks and the treats.
The main challenge, according to the creators, was the size of the drive-through event.
We're literally at 30,000 pumpkins or more, probably about 7,000 stacks of hay, or hay stacks, or hay bales. It's just the amount of space that we've been able to cover, and we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a quick drive-through, that literally people got to have an experience.
Interest in drive-throughs, an essential part of California lifestyle for decades, had been waning. But with limits to crowd sizes brought on by the coronavirus pandemic, business is booming again.
They've had drive-through wedding chapels, drive-through, of course, drive-in movie theaters, which are back now very strong. There's drive-in movies everywhere. Drive-through funeral parlors they had.
A conservation group offered another Halloween drive-through experience. A self-guided tour of five storybook-style houses in the city.
Storybook architecture is meant to kind of inspire this fantasy of the past and this fantasy of the magical creatures that are living inside, whether it's sort of hobbits or witches or warlocks or goblins. And all the houses on this trail have that kind of fantastical, whimsical quality.
So, despite the pandemic, inventive minds have conjured a Halloween season for Los Angeles residents. Jenya Dulo for VOA News, Los Angeles, California.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia, and you may continue online. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all great places to follow us at VOA Asia. And of course, VOA will have complete election coverage. We'll have all the results as soon as they're available, so be sure to follow us at VOA Asia. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.